There can be bad language and adult concepts in this program. So please watch out for little ears if you've got your podcast playing and pop on some headphones. That way no one can get offended but you. You're listening to the Rights for Women podcast, where we celebrate women writers, support women's rights, and talk all things women and writing. I'm Kel Butler, podcaster and wannabe author. I'm founder of Listen Up Podcasting, where we make podcasts for a positive world. Check me out at www.listenuppodcasting.com.au or find me on Facebook.
And I'm Pamela Cook, author of 5 novels, 4 traditionally published and 1 indie release. I'm a writing teacher and a podcaster. My latest release, Cross My Heart, is available now at all online retailers and at pamelacook.com.au.
Listen to all of our episodes at www.rightsforwomen.com or subscribe wherever you get your pods. Hey, 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 it's Kelly from Rights for Women. This is a bonus episode of the conversation Pam and I had on the latest episode of The Convo Couch that we just released, the one with Leah Swan called Killing the Darlings. Great ep, go back and listen to it. Highly recommend. Anyway, Pam and I were inspired by a Facebook post we saw to talk about what authors earn or not, because authors aren't earning a lot, and where they're earning their money from and how. And that conversation went for a good hour. So we couldn't put it all into our latest Convo Couch episode. Instead, what we did was we cut that conversation out and we've created this bonus episode all about what authors in Australia are earning, how they're earning it, and what are the alternatives going into the future. So this is that chat. We hope you enjoy it and we hope you get something out of it. And we certainly hope that this conversation keeps going, because it's an absolute travesty that we're not paying for these gifts. It's really good to be back, Pam. It was a nice break. We needed the break. I think we took on too much and got a little bit overwhelmed with all the episodes we were trying to record and edit and release, and all the grants we were trying to get to be able to pay our way with this kind of thing. And I think making the choice to break, It was hard, and I know it sort of put a bit of a pause on things for a little bit for people, and we're sorry about that, but it was necessary. We just had to stop to be able to get over that hump of just too much work.
Yeah, and look, we've got, like you say, the break has done us the world of good, as they say, and we have some fabulous episodes coming up. We've got quite a few book launch episodes coming out in the coming weeks, and some great chats with authors, including a wonderful chat I had with Favel Perret for Anatomy of a Novel for her beautiful book, There Was Still Love. So some really great writing craft stuff coming up in that one.
Yeah, I can't wait to edit that one. It's sitting in my to-do list, and yeah, can't wait to get my teeth stuck in. But what I really want to talk to you about today, Pam, actually has nothing to do with your interview. For a change. It comes from a Facebook post that I saw in one of our private writing groups. So I'm not going to say who posted it, and I'm not going to say the group that we got it from, because I want to respect the privacy of this group. But it was a post that really highlighted to me what Australian authors are earning for their books. And frankly, it made me want to vomit. I was shocked. The range. Okay, so Pam, I want you to seriously talk to me about this, because you're the published author out there, right? So this is what.
Okay.
What is a reasonable amount to expect from a book advance, either from a big publisher or from a smaller publisher? So what I noticed was, and this is the bit that really shocked me, was that for YA and kids books, your average advance was about $1,000 to $3,000. That's it. And in Australia, for an adult fiction novel of any sort, or even a non-fiction or a memoir, you're looking at like $3,000 to $5,000 or $8,000 at the top end. That's atrocious. That is astonishing to me, given how much work and time goes into writing a book. How is that even plausible? How are writers existing in this country?
Well, the absolute truth is that very, very few writers, particularly here in Australia, live off their earnings. You know, you have to supplement your book publishing with other things. So that could be teaching, mentoring, editing, manuscript assessment, you know, speaking engagements, which is why, you know, COVID has hit so hard for many writers who do the speaking circuit and do festivals and things. But, yeah, when you see the reality of what authors actually earn, it's actually quite shocking. And, look, a big part of it here in Australia is because it's a much, much smaller market. You will have noticed that the advances for particularly the US, the UK, bigger, you know, populations are substantially higher.
Like into the 100,000. Some
yeah,
of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I think those advances that they're talking about at the moment from 1 to 3,000, and in some cases, publishers are no longer offering advances. It's purely a royalty-based scheme, which I'll talk about in a minute. But it has actually dropped, you know, from reading that thread and from my own experience of publishing, you know, when I was traditionally published, over that, what that was going back. So my first book came out in 2012.
So you were earning on the higher end of an advance, weren't you, Pam? Because you're sitting around that sort of 5 to 8K range rather than that 1 to 3K range. And that is considered a high end advance.
Yeah. Look, back in, I won't say exactly what my advances were, but back in when I was published, certainly between, say, 2012, 2016, my advances were higher than that again. And that was at the time quite common. And it's this thing, I mean, it was a really interesting thread to read because it's one of the unspoken things, you know, in publishing is what books, what advances that are out there because, you know, then authors start to question, well, why haven't I received an advance like that? Why is my publisher, you know, so stingy? Why has that author in the same publishing house as me received such a big advance and mine was so much smaller? So it's always been something that has been very hush-hush. So it was really interesting. But I think the thing that a lot of people don't understand, certainly if you're in the writing industry, you would most likely understand this, but I think some newer writers wouldn't, and definitely a lot of readers wouldn't understand that what actually happens is, say you're given an advance, say of $3,000, like you say, or let's go five, say you get an advance. So you basically, the publisher says, yes, we want to publish your book. We'll give you an advance of $5,000. You usually get half of that on signing. So you'd get $2,500 when you sign the contract, and then you would get the other $2,500 on publication day. So that's, let's say, an upfront payment for, you know, the writing and publishing of the book. Obviously included in that is, you know, they're going to do the marketing and things like that, even though you are expected to do a lot of that yourself now as well. What then happens is that with every book sold, you as the author earn 10% of that sales price. So if your book sells for $30, you would get roughly $3. So about $2.70, you know, in tax and stuff.
Is that
taken
all?
Out.
Per book.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Once you sell enough books for all those amounts of $2.70 to add up to your $5,000, that's what's called earning out. Or earning out your advance.
Okay, so I was going to ask you about this because that was a term that kept coming up again and again. Mm. And a lot of people were saying, I'd rather have a smaller advance and earn out quickly than to have a big advance that I'm never going to earn out. And that was a whole other question. Yes, go.
Yeah, so the reason for that, so if you sell enough books to earn out your advance, basically the publisher has said in paying you that $5,000, they've said, we think you're going to sell, or we trust or hope that you're going to sell $5,000 worth of books, right? Or that amount of books, so your $2.70 is going to amount to that, right? I don't know what the number is there, but that's basically what they're saying in giving you that amount. So then once you've earned that $5,000 back, every book that you sell after that is then a royalty for you. So each year you'll get a royalty statement, usually twice a year, where all those additional $2.70s that add up, you then get, you know, so you might get $30, or you might get $500, or you might get $5,000, depending on how many books are sold. Okay.
Now that's different to lending rights and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
a whole other
different.
Thing with public yeah. lending and things as well, isn't there, where yeah. you get extra royalties. Okay, yeah. So this is purely based on sale of book royalties.
Sale of book and payment from the publisher. So when some people were saying they'd rather get a smaller advance, the reason for that is that when you get the advance, you get that advance regardless of whether you sell enough books to earn that, you know, to earn it out or not. So say you got a $5,000 advance, but you only sold enough books, say in the first, I don't know, they like to look at it in the first few months, but I mean, realistically, let's say the first year or so. If you only sold enough books to make out, to add up to $2,500, you don't have to pay anything back. You keep all that money. But what the message, I guess, that the publisher gets then is, well, we've paid you $5,000, but you've only earned back half of that amount. So the book hasn't sold enough to justify
the investment.
I guess, yeah, the investment that we've put into you.
So it reflects on their investment.
Yeah, yeah. So that doesn't mean that they won't sign you for another book, but it sort of puts you on a little bit of shaky ground. Do you know what I mean? Like that they somebody else, another author might come along that has a book that they think is going to be more successful, more popular. They're going to be able to sell more copies. They may not re-sign you. Mm. But hear about bidding wars and publishers coming in and, you know, auctioning books being put up to auction for publishers. And, you know, people can get up, you know, like 50,000, 100,000 sort of advance. That's a lot of money to earn back. And it's a lot of pressure on the author to sell that many books. Not that you're personally selling them, but you know what I mean? Like there's that stress that, oh, like if I have a $100,000 advance and I only sell, you know, $30,000 worth, what's going to happen? Are they going to want to publish another book?
Mm.
So often it is better to get a smaller advance. You might have more hope of selling that out, and then, you know, then you would receive – you'd still be paid. You'd still receive royalties on top of that. But the other thing is that the diminishing amount in advances that has happened over the last few years. So, you know, with the closure of bookshops, with – I don't know, more pressure on the whole industry. Publishers seem to be offering much lower advances now than they had previously.
And much less marketing support. So not only are they lowering the advances so that, you know, authors can't actually live off their writing, but they're also like reducing the marketing support, which we actually talked about in another episode last year, I think. We were saying how I think you said you'd watched it shrinking down to like now a period of maybe 4 weeks, which is why we felt so badly for everyone in COVID-19 when we realised, oh my goodness, authors can't launch their books anymore and they only have this tiny window of time when a publisher backs them in there, especially if they're a new author, to be able to get out there and get in the face of readers. And publishers have already contracted that time down to as tight as they can, put all that responsibility on the authors, and now they're not even paying the authors in the first instance. And for example, when I got my website built, I guess, no, it's different, isn't it? So I guess that's me going to someone for a service and I'm paying them, because I was going to say, yeah, I pay them like half of it up front and then I paid, you know, the other half when it was complete. But no one would come to me. Like I would never be able to go to a web designer and say, can you just like do most of this for the smallest amount of money? I know it's going to take you months and lots of hours of work, and you potentially might have to put in the cracks of your life or push other stuff back. But we're not going to pay you for that until later, until we can sort of see where we think it might fit. That there's no other place apart from the arts where people expect everyone to put in all that effort for nothing, and then there's no guarantee at the end of it. It really is a labor of love, like something that people, an imperative, they have no choice but to do. Because why else would you do it?
Good question.
Do you think, Pam, like you're the author? I'm not the author. I'm just the shocked reader.
Why
who
do
loves
you do
my
it?
Authors?
Yes, this is something I often ask myself. Look, you do it because you love to do it. You love to write. You love that process of getting words onto a blank page, getting a whole collection of those words, molding it into something more refined, you know, polishing it up, and putting it out there so you make a connection with people. That's actually what it's about. And I think anybody that goes into writing and publishing, look, there's nothing wrong with wanting to make money. It's a great goal and I'm all for it. But, you know, if you're going into this industry with the absolute intention or the motivation, I guess, not intention, there's nothing wrong with having the intention of making money. And I think we should have that intention as artists.
But being that as your
driver, if the motivation is all about the money, then you're in the wrong game. You're delusional because, like I said, there's a handful of writers, I think, in Australia who would be able to make a living just from their books alone. And, you know, it's something that, yeah, you do it because you love to do it and you hope maybe that one day you will be able to make more money from your books. There is that constant, I guess, drive that you have. And some people, it does get too much and in the end they go, you know what, this is all just too hard, I'm not doing it anymore. And that's why your main motivation for writing can't be the money, because you'll probably give it up if it is. If you've got the joy of writing and the love of creating stories there as your prime motivation, I think that's really important. And the money is a great secondary motivation, I guess. That's just the way I think, you know, that I look at it. And look, the other thing too is that people are making money by self-publishing, indie publishing their books. And it's also not to say that you can't go into traditional publishing and make money. You know, we've interviewed lots of authors who are doing fabulously, you know, with their books. They're selling books here, they're selling books overseas, and they are doing it. So it is a possibility, you know, it's not something that's impossible. But I just think that you have to have that love for the writing to keep yourself going through those more difficult, you know, financial periods, which can be sort of a permanent thing.
Mm, and it seems like it's not going the other way in this country, at least, that from exactly this conversation, from that thread, from the trends that you've witnessed yourself and experienced, it seems like we have a shrinking industry in terms of paying our writers and our artists. So it really is down to the gift of the artist. And it's always been that, hasn't it? It's always been the artists who are expected to give the most vital gifts, the ones that ultimately end up changing the world, really, and never valued for the kind of input that they have in being able to shift our society and bring hope and love and inspiration to others and a sense of belonging and a sense of home. And there we are saying, oh, maybe $1,000 for that story that you've blood, sweat and teared over. But we'll go and spend, no worries, you know, lay money out for something way less valuable. You know, some piece of consumerism, and it's just so arse up. It really, really is. But I'd love to talk to you quickly about what you just touched on, because I find this another fascinating aspect. There's two other things I want to talk about in reference to this. One is, yes, the indie side. So as a publisher and an author, Pam, because you've now published your own novel, you know all the intricacies and costs associated for a publisher in getting a book out there. So what is the reality of, outside of that $1,000 to $8,000 average for whatever book that they're paying, which is a pittance, what is the reality of the extra investment they're putting in? And should authors be looking at the self-publishing journey if this is the direction of the book industry at the moment?
Yeah, that's a really big question, Kel. Look, the publisher, apart from paying you, obviously, for your IP, your intellectual product, which is your writing and your book, they're paying for covers, cover design, which can, you know, range anywhere from a few hundred dollars into thousands of dollars, depending on, you know, who they use and how original the artwork is and all that sort of thing. They're paying for copy editing and structural editing. They're either doing that in-house or paying a freelance editor. which can be up to around a few thousand dollars for that, possibly more again if you have multiple edits. You know, some publishers do use in-house editors for that process. Others use freelance editors. They're paying for things like the formatting of the book. What else did I have to pay for when I published Cross My Heart? You know, then things like, you know, obviously the printing. So there are lots of additional costs that they're paying on top of what they pay you as the author. You know, they are making quite a substantial investment. And then, of course, the marketing. And I think because of the cost of all these things now, that's a big reason why less and less has been put into marketing for books. And more is expected of the author.
In there, but it's not. Do you think it's also because they've realised that they can actually push this back onto the author more because of things like social media, the internet, Zoom conferencing? Do you feel like that maybe the opening up of an online platform has actually given publishers the ability to just go, oh, well, we can actually palm that back off onto the author, or not so much?
I think a lot more is expected of authors these days in terms of social media, and it's in your own interest too. I mean, having had the experience I've had with self-publishing now, indie publishing, if I go back to traditional publishing, I would probably do a lot more paid advertising for the book myself, not just be as reliant, not on the publisher, because like you said, you do get a window of publicity, you get a certain budget, and depending on how many books they envisage that, you know, how big the market is going to be for the book, that'll reflect how much they put into the marketing budget. So
it's about a month, isn't it? Is that what you said? You get about a month now with the once the book's published, where they really kind of pump it out, and then after that.
Yeah, again, it depends, I think, on the book itself and what their expectations of it are overall. But, yeah, I think you can probably say you get about a month of sort of publicity support, and then, I mean, you still get that support going on if you go looking for it and asking for it. But in terms of active, you know, organisation of, you know, events and speaking engagements and things like that from the publisher, probably a couple of weeks before the book comes out and maybe a few weeks after
So
is probably what you could expect.
That's actually a good point. When we say active support, what does that mean? When we say that you get about a month of active support from the publisher, what is that in real terms?
Okay, well, that's them organising things like, you know, interviews, like lining up interviews with their authors on podcasts, in magazines, trying to get book reviews. And these things can go on. I mean, there will be a lot of work behind the scenes for the publicist and the marketing department, because they don't just do it in 4 weeks. They do a lot of this leading up to the launch of the book. So it'll happen over a number of months. But in terms of when the book is released, those things are all likely to happen in the 2 weeks prior, or the few weeks prior to the book coming out, and then the, you know, say month or so after, because there's new books coming out all the time, so they have to, you know, switch their attention and their budgets, I guess, from book to book and author to author. You know, they can't just have a perpetual, you know, publicity campaign for one book.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when having gone from both sides of that fence, what are the pros and the cons? What have you pulled out of that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think you can with indie or self-publishing, of course, you get a lot more than 10% when you sell a book. So if you sell an e-book, rather than getting 25%, which you would probably get with a traditional publisher of the ebook, you'd get on Amazon or Apple or something like that, you get 70%. So it's a much higher percentage that you're actually getting. But then you're putting all the costs into all those things up front, you know, for the editing, all that sort of stuff. And that's why there is.
And the time.
And the time. Oh, absolutely.
You're also investing the time.
Like you said, you're a publisher, you're not just an author. So if you want the book to sell, you've got to look at different ways of marketing the book. you do have the advantage that you don't have to necessarily, you don't have to stick to that window around when the book launches. You know, you can keep coming up with new ideas for how to publicize the book, you know, get yourself onto podcasts, get yourself into magazines if you have that luck. You've also got the advantage of being able to do Facebook advertising, Amazon advertising, you know, advertise on Apple and all those sorts of things yourself. But you can do that even as a traditionally published author. You can still take out ads for your book on those platforms. Just from a mindset point of view, you expect that your publisher will do that. And they do that. But like I said, if I went back into traditional publishing, I would also supplement what the publisher is doing probably with my own advertising as well.
Do you feel like the investment and the effort that you put in indie publishing is worth what you're getting out of it or might potentially get out of it in the future as a result of the extra you get per book, per sale, per ebook, per audiobook when you do audiobooks, compared to when you were published and they gave you the advance and then you have to earn the advance out to get anything else, but you didn't have to worry about getting the covers sorted, getting the book printed, any of that stuff. Do you think it balances out, or do you feel like that maybe self – what I'm trying to understand is self-publishing maybe something that authors need to potentially start looking at more, less like that alternative, and more like, oh, maybe we should be taking control of this ourselves more in order to actually start earning real money.
Look, there's a lot of authors who are doing both. So it's what you call being a hybrid author. So you would publish. So, for instance, if you get your rights back to books that have previously been published with a traditional publisher, you can then do what you want with it. So I'm currently in the process. I've got the rights back for one of my books, the second book that I published, Essie's Way. So I'm currently in the process of giving that a revision. It'll get a new cover, probably definitely a new title. And I'm going to republish that myself. It won't cost me as much as it did for Cross My Heart. Well, A, because I've learnt some things, but B, because I've also got the structural edit is done and I don't really need that, but I will get a copy edit on it. So a lot of authors are doing this. They're getting the rights back for their previously published books, traditionally published books. They're repackaging them and selling them themselves. Hoping, I guess, to attract new readers, tapping into different markets. And a lot of authors are also taking the indie route because of the control that they have over the whole process.
Yeah.
So you can control things like the cover, who you choose for the editor, what sort of marketing you're going to do, what categories you're going to be listed on things like Amazon, which is really, really important in terms of sales. For me, having done both, and I am going to continue down at the moment the indie path, but that's not to say that I won't, for my next book, for instance, that I'm working on the new one, that I won't approach a traditional publisher. But I do think that there is a lot less, indie publishing or self-publishing used to be quite looked down on, and I think in some sectors of the publishing world it still is to some extent, but I think it also is a lot more accepted now because I think a lot of authors have discovered you can produce a really fabulous quality book, and you can, if you look at it in the long term, I think it's very difficult to just put one book up and go, oh, I'm going to make all this money from one self-published book. You know, it is a crowded marketplace. It's very hard to get visibility because you're not in traditional bookstores. The beauty of, I guess, the current times is that a lot more people are looking for books online. And that is something that, you know, indie authors have been able to tap into because the ebook market is
booming,
increasing, and the audio market is just going
off,
you know, that shit crazy. I think it's a really interesting thing to watch. And, you know, I listen to quite a few podcasts about indie publishing, and, you know, what they're saying is that they feel that traditional publishers are going to start taking lessons from self-published authors in terms of marketing and things like that. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting sort of thing to watch over the next few years, I think.
And what about the idea? Because we've seen a few of these come into play and interviewed some people who are doing this. But what about the idea of small collectives of authors coming together, like a tiny press almost, to support each other in being able to publish their works? That's a whole other thing that's starting to emerge as well in reaction to exactly this. It's almost like authors supporting authors outside of the publishing industry.
Yeah. And look, I think going back, you know, to maybe 10, 15 years ago when ebooks were first a thing, I think there was a big rush for, oh, great, I can put my own book up, I can blah, blah, blah. You know, some people were putting products up there that were inferior, that weren't properly edited, that were basically, you know, you'd be lucky if you could get through a page without just going, oh my God, I can't read this. But, you know, things have changed a lot. As I said, there are a lot more authors doing indie publishing. People have realized you can't put inferior products up there. And that's not to say that they don't, but you can also get, you know, really books that are hard to read from an editing perspective in the traditional world too. So, you know,
But is that because the tools have changed and gotten better as well for authors to use to be able to do all this so independently? So now that, you know, back then they probably didn't have the software and the online tools that you could readily upload something to or send it off and have it come back to you 3 days later. And, you know, so everything can be schmicker at a much better and a much smaller cost.
Yeah. But I think readers have also spoken, you know, readers, you know, it's all about, you know, what reviews and things you get. I mean, if there's no point putting in up an inferior product, something that you haven't had a quality edit on, because readers are going to pick up on that, you know, like, okay, maybe some readers don't care so much about that. They just want the story, and that's fine. But readers have spoken over the years, and a lot of those sort of less edited books, if you like, less polished books have sort of been weeded out. So I think overall people have realized you do have to basically put up a quality product if you want to sell
it. There needs to be a standard.
But
if you're asking people to pay money, there needs to be a standard.
Yeah.
That's basically what it comes down to, really. It's the same with everything.
Yeah.
There should be a base standard if you're asking people to fork out their dollars and invest in your product.
And I guess it's about, particularly in the ebook market now, selling, lowering the price, but hoping to sell more. You know, because so rather than selling an ebook for like $15.99, which is something that a lot of traditional publishers still do. Going back to what you were saying about the smaller, you know, writers getting together and forming their own presses, that is happening quite a bit now. And we're actually going to hopefully speak to some writers fairly soon who have formed a small press, Pilyara Press, for that very reason, a group of women authors who have sort of been traditionally published, some of them, others haven't been as yet traditionally published, but are bringing all their skill sets and putting them together. You know, so some of them they're all writers, but some of them have a marketing background, some have an editing background, others are in, you know, design. So bringing all those skills together and combining them and actually, you know, supporting each other and getting their books out there and really, you know, helping each other promote them as a group. Yeah, and I think that's a fabulous idea.
And also there was something, I can't remember where I read it, to be honest. I should probably write these things down. But there was mentioning that in the self-publishing arena, the highest percentage of people who are choosing to do this at the moment are women.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if it's that same, because it's a similar thing in podcasting, that element where it means that women are taking control back of their content and their voices. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's true.
And getting rid of the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that, you know, women, a lot of women writers are seeing that they actually have the skills to do this. They like the fact that publishing the book themselves actually gives them control. It's just a great way of getting your book out there. You know, it comes back to this thing we've talked about before, Kel, where, you know, traditional publishing is a business. And while they are fabulous promoters of writing and of authors, the bottom line is they have X number of dollars to spend per year. They're looking to maximize, you know, the return on investment. They can only publish a certain number of manuscripts per year. But out there in the world, there are so many fabulous manuscripts that are not getting through the gate, if you like, of traditional publishers. Why not, you know, put your time, put maybe a bit of money if you've got it, if you can do that up front, into investing in yourself and getting your book out to the readers, which is your ultimate goal as a writer, is to connect with the readers out there.
And try and earn as much of that money off it from your hard work for yourself as you can in the process.
Yeah, and I would say to anybody who's listening is maybe thinking, yeah, maybe I can do this, is to educate yourself about it. You know, if indie publishing is something that you've thought, oh, maybe I could have a go at that, you know, there's so much out there on the internet about it. There's podcasts about it, you know, the Mark Dawson self-publishing formula, Joanna Penn, the indie author mindset. There are stacks and stacks of podcasts, and these people have done the hard yards. They've done the research. They know what they're talking about. So, you know, before you go either way, do the research and educate yourself. Another author I was listening to recently on a podcast said, you know, if you're sort of caught in the middle and you don't know whether you should go indie or whether you should go traditional, write down the lists of pros and cons for each, and then choose which set of lists feels like you, you know, like go with your gut and think which of those, you know, look at, I mean, like you say, there is a lot of cons in terms of the time you have to spend marketing and doing all those other things for indie publishing. You probably can focus more just on the writing if you're traditionally published, but, you know, do the work, do the pros and cons for each, and then see which way you want to go. You know, I think the thing is now that indie publishing doesn't have to be the second choice. It doesn't have to be your choice just because you think, oh, I'm not going to get published by a traditional publisher. It can be your first choice if you want it to be.
The landscape is changing, I think. As you said, the landscape is changing, and people's attitudes towards what indie published means is changing as well. Now, I actually want to take this conversation full circle, which means that this conversation with you and I right now may need to become an episode unto itself, Pam, because I actually feel like this is all really good stuff for writers out there. Because we've never really gone in deep about the whole earnings and the cost of indie and the investment of publishing and, you know, where are authors earning their money or not earning their money? So the other side of that thread, you brought it up before, was definitely the theme that suggested Australian authors need to start selling on the international stage, that the people who were selling their books internationally, and some of them not even selling them into the Australian market at all, were earning much more and had much more earning potential than the people who were just selling into the Australian market. So talk to me about that. Why are more Australian authors not going international?
Oh, that's a good question, Kel. I did think about this myself when I thought, oh, would I approach an overseas publisher? I think to some extent it depends on what you write. So, for instance, Australian crime fiction sells well here in Australia. It doesn't generally sell well internationally. Australian fiction in general does not sell well internationally. So someone like Tim Winton, for instance, even that you would imagine would have a massive overseas, you know, sales track record, he does sell overseas, but not in the amounts that you might expect. I think we've had a handful of authors that have done really, really well overseas. And I guess it comes back to the market. Like, if you think of the United States, it's a massive country, massive population. They've got so many authors there already. You know, it's like not like the publishers over there need to look outside for additional authors. It's probably a bit the same in the UK. But I think if you can tap into, you know, if your goal really is overseas publication, I think you need to look at what is selling in those markets, and then think, is that what I write, or is it something like what I write? Could I adapt my writing if your goal is really to hit that market? Could I adapt my writing for that market?
Do you need an agent specific for that? Is this something where you need to go and seek an agent or a manager who will then deal with international rights, international sales of your book? Is that something separate to the publisher that you get in Australia or the agent that you get in Australia? I know in film and TV, they can be two very separate things. So how does it work with books and publishing?
Yeah. Look, you can be signed with a traditional publisher here in Australia. If you sell them the rights for all of your rights, including international rights, part of their job then is to try and sell your book to overseas publishers. But in a lot of cases, authors will not sell the overseas rights to the publisher. They'll either keep the rights themselves, usually through an agent. So an agent would hold those rights for you, and the agent would then try and sell those rights separately to an overseas publisher.
If you're wanting to get into an international market, you have – so because we're always saying write not thinking about the audience. Write the book for yourself first, right? The book you want to read, not thinking about the audience. Yep. But it sounds like if you want to crack an international market, you can't, like, where does that fit?
Yeah.
You know, not thinking about the audience but making sure that it's palatable for the international market. Where does the author sit with that conundrum?
I think the location has a fair bit to do with it. So going back, say, to the United States, I don't think a lot of I'm not saying all, but I don't think there's a great need for American readers to read books, or a great desire for them to read books set in Australia. But if you have somewhere like Paris or London or New York or Rome, an international setting in your book, you're probably more likely to sell the book internationally. That's just my opinion. There might be people out there that would disagree with that.
To make it less location centric.
Yeah.
So, for example, like Leanne Moriarty, I find her books could be anywhere.
So Michael Robotham, for instance, I know has a very well-known Australian crime writer, has deliberately set books in London so that they would sell overseas.
Hmm.
So I think if you're looking for international sales, your best bet is probably to include, at least, or to concentrate on, in some cases, a more international setting and location for your story.
So if you have already written a book or a series of books and you have the international rights and you're interested in thinking about whether you can get it into an international market, what advice do you have for writers?
Well, there are markets overseas that do, enjoy Australian books and Australian settings. So Germany, for instance, is the biggest buyer of Australian books outside of Australia, I think. The Germans seem to really like the –
That's so interesting.
Yeah, I know. They love the Australian setting, which is something that
– It's a pretty great setting.
Yeah, well, I mean, why not? I think more people should be exposed to it.
More people want to read us.
I mean
– Who wouldn't want to read these settings in the bush, on the beach?
Yeah, you know what blows me away? Like in the UK, for instance, where I think – what's the Australian – is it Neighbours or something that's been on air over there for like 30
Neighbours.
Years or something, still going?
Yes, I can't believe it's still going. I know.
But they don't buy Australian fiction. It's like – not generally. And again, I think it comes back to they've got enough of their own, so here in Australia, for instance, if you think of all the people trying to get published, we all, most of them would approach an Australian publisher. That's happening in each country. So it's not like those bigger markets need to look outside the people they've already got there, but if they come across a book that they think has the potential to sell really well in that market, then of course they're going to be interested in it.
So really it's just like give it a shot. Go find an agent and give it a shot and see if it works. And yeah. if it doesn't work, maybe next time you're writing the book, see if you can slip some little international edge in there to make it more palatable and see what comes out of it. Some people who had sold internationally were actually saying that that was what enabled them to earn a living off their writing, as opposed to if they just sold into Australia. And it just made me think, why do we not try to get our stories into that market more, considering Australia imports and consumes so many stories from other places? I think because yeah. we do that, I assume other places do that too. Aren't they interested?
No.
Like,
no, but again, it's because they don't need it.
After this conversation, I don't know, I feel like we're sort of saying that authors, particularly authors who are of the more minority voices out there and less represented, it might be worth looking at alternatives if the publishing industry doesn't take a turn for the better in terms of how it's investing in writers and the art of writing. Mm. Is that where we're at? The market is fluid.
I think it could possibly be. You know, I think people are starting to take a lot more of that control into their own hands, like you say, either independently or in a collective type situation, because the readers are out there. You know, there's readers out there for any sort of author, really. I mean, you know, there's so many niche areas of readership, and I don't think it, you know, I don't think you should stop yourself writing or stop your desire to be published because you think that you can't crack a traditional publisher. You know, there are some people that really want that and need that, validation, I guess, of being with a traditional publisher. And I think we're sort of, because there's so many people wanting to get published and so few publishers, I guess, you know, look, or so books able to be published traditionally, there tends to be this sort of feeling that, you know, when you do get a contract or when your book is sold into a traditional publisher, that we're so grateful.
Mm.
You know, we're so
yeah.
grateful to have somebody take our work. And that's wonderful, and I think it's a natural way to feel. But the danger in that is also that we undervalue what we have achieved in writing that book and in, you know, and we also undervalue, I think, our own potential. You know, we sort of spend a lot of our time, well, I know I have, and I've spoken to other authors about this, you tend to spend so much of your time being grateful to the publisher for publishing you that you often don't stand up for your own rights in terms of what you should get in your contract. You're a bit scared to, you know, challenge anything that's in the contract or to approach your publisher about any changes to anything, because we know how rare it is almost to get across that line, you know. But like I say, I think that is starting to change, that people are starting to say, hang on, I've put a lot of time and effort into this. I know that, you know, my work is valuable. I want to actually receive what I deserve for it, you know. And I think that's where those sorts of threads and authors sharing their experiences and sharing their knowledge with each other is really, really important.
And in this point that you're making right now, particularly important for women, trans and non-binary writers who have always been told to shut up and please people and just be grateful for any breadcrumb you're ever being given, and you're lucky to have a piece of
yeah.
the space that we let you in here.
Yep.
And I think more and more people are getting sick of the idea that they're just meant to be grateful when there's something in the pit that says, I am worth so much more than this. My work is worth so much more than this. And I don't know where we go from there, but I don't know. It feels like we're at some point of a crossroads in the publishing industry in terms of the worth of the writing and the art and the work and what people are actually getting paid for it and being able to earn a living. Mm. I mean, words on a page are what educate the future, yet we don't pay for it. What the fuck is that,
yeah.
right? Anyway, should we end it there?
We should, probably. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Rights for Women podcast. If you enjoyed listening, we would really appreciate it if you could head over to wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating or review so that other people can find us too. If you want to hear more brilliant conversations with great writers, you can head to our website, www.writesforwomen.com, where you can catch all the episodes from the Convo Couch and the Anatomy of a Novel series, as well as the Book Launch, a season of episodes created to help authors launch their books in isolation.
And while you are there, why don't you check out our Patreon page? Patreon is how people can support the artists making the work they love. So if you love Writes for Women and want to support us in supporting other authors, become a Patreon subscriber and get some cool little bonuses while you're at it. To everyone who is already a subscriber, we appreciate your passion for our project and thank you very much. You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. Thank you for staying home and supporting our authors. This podcast episode was produced and edited by Kel Butler from Listen Up Podcasting. Podcasts for a positive world.